Hey, I'm back. Vacation's over.
Vacation's over, buddy.
Vacation's over, and I luckily did not get forced to watch the DC movie this week.
I spared you this week.
After last episode's just travesty of just being foisted into the world of Dad's comics, I got a reprieve, went to Wildwood, where it was 103 degrees
oh my God.
For the whole week. I'll talk about that a little bit later. We got to watch some mixed bag of movies and shows this week, but lots of fun, lots of adventures, and what do we have in store for everybody?
So tonight we're going to talk about Vacation Friends, the new John Cena movie that just dropped on Hulu. White Lotus wrapped its first season, and apparently it is the first season because it's gotten added for more on HBO Max. Anthrax is celebrating their 40th anniversary, and in honor of their 40th anniversary, because they couldn't do anything during COVID, they made a documentary biopic series on YouTube, and it's pretty amazing. We've got some thoughts on it. And finally, we got around to watching Snake Eyes, the G.I. Joe prequel
Origins movie. Yeah, I think that's a fair thing. White Lotus is getting a second season.
It was a kind of a last second surprise. They were like, you know what, we can just keep telling these stories with different characters.
I think that works. I haven't watched a drama in a very long time.
Really?
Like, I don't watch dramas. I'm not the biggest, unless there's like some sort of if there's some sort of hook to it, like some sort of thriller hook to it, I don't really watch dramas.
That makes sense.
And then Allison started watching that one. She's like, George, this is like dark, but it's also not that dark. So I think it's actually a Mai Tai happy hour special.
Really?
I'm like, all right, I'll check it out. And she actually watched it first. And I was like, all right, this is actually right up my alley, because the quirkiness, it very much like the guy who did what's the name of that? You see, this is what I screw up all the time, because I'm not prepared, because I'm freaking working from home.
Yes.
And I'm drowning.
It's happening.
In the world. Who's that guy who does a lot of Bill Murray movies? Royal Tenenbaums.
Oh, now I'm blanking on it.
I don't remember his name.
Wes Adams.
Yes.
Wes Anderson.
Wes Anderson. I felt it was very, very like that, just not quite as weird, but like I felt vibes of that and vibes of, I wanted to go back and watch Ozarks again. I'm like, she's like, this is a lot like Ozarks. She doesn't like Ozarks. She's like, it kind of feels like Ozarks. I'm like, yeah, but not ultra violent. Like, yeah, it's kind of like Ozarks, except not like, not that bad in terms of like, you know, Breaking Bad. But let's talk a little bit about Vacation Friends. You threw this at me. I had no idea John Cena had another movie, another summer movie. And now I also know why it is a Hulu movie.
Yeah, I mean, this would have been one that would have been in and out of the theaters. Let's be real about this.
Yeah.
This is not one that is going to be like the game changer comedy for anybody, but it was a good watch. You know, one thing I will do a quick little sidebar on here is that I gotta say, Hulu, man, you know, they continue to drop the ball. It's as if they don't want to even let their audience know that this movie is out. Like, the day
it
drops,
all of them, they're all like that. They have the worst, like,
Hulu's the worst. Like, it wasn't even on the first screen. I had to go into the search bar and manually type in the first letters, and it took like 4 or 5 letters before Vacation Friends popped up. That is not the thing you should do when you've got a brand new movie that is premiering only on your streaming service.
No, I agree 1,000%. I'm challenged with all of them. I bitch about Netflix all the time. Largely, this show is, especially during pandemic, we've been largely doing Netflix stuff, but it's not easy to find Netflix stuff, and it's not easy to find good reviews. Like, I really wish these on-demand streaming services would hire whoever does like Amazon's recommendations.
They're great. Amazon's great. I always know when new stuff's out on Amazon.
Amazon Prime knows exactly what I like. And you know, I was going through it the other day because I was looking for Lighthouse. I finally feel like I need to get through Lighthouse, which I've struggled to watch on 3 separate occasions. But, you know, it's supposedly one of the best horror movies ever. And it's just black and white. It's hard to do. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later. But because I watched another black and white movie this week because John-johned me.
I didn't tell you to watch a black and white movie.
You told me to watch a movie that was the wrong movie.
Oh, no.
That happened to be a black and white movie. But we'll get to that a little bit later. Look, it's very hard to find stuff on demand streaming services. If you're listening to this, can you guys just do a better recommendation system? Like, it's really tough. And even like, I'm even smart. I separate Gabe into his own account so that I don't get a lot of like cartoons.
Oh, that's smart.
I don't get like tricked up with that. Though my YouTube's a mess because he watches that. And that's all like, hey, you want to watch a lot of Metallica videos and a lot of Offspring videos and a lot of Transformers unboxings. That's what my YouTube is.
But the recommendations
of Hulu are horrible. Okay, look, Vacation Friends. I am going to say my thoughts first.
Go for it.
First of all, it's a movie, and don't ask me who the actors are, because other than John Cena, I have no idea who the fuck these actors are. John can fill you in on that later.
I certainly can.
But it was a couple that were on a vacation to the Caribbean or something, some nondescript Caribbean type.
Mexico.
Close. Close, right? Close.
Sort of.
Your timing was great there.
You're welcome.
They go there to vacation. The husband's going to the male lover is going to propose to his significant other. Mm-hmm. And out of nowhere, like John Cena and his girlfriend, I think it's his girlfriend, they materialize out of nowhere, and they are the loud, obnoxious vacation friends who take this very nice straight-laced black couple. And look, you gotta talk about there clearly is, like, part of the joke here is the fact that John Cena is the obnoxious white dude, and they're just like everything that you hate about like white dudes. And the other couple is just like, we just want to, like, you know, we obviously go back to our careers at home, and
yeah,
we have life. John Cena does cocaine and has sex and does a lot of cocaine, and he's trying to be the bad friend. We've seen a lot of movies like these, the bad friend, but in this case, it's the bad vacation friend. This is where I get tripped up. I have never had a vacation friend.
So I've definitely met people. I've traveled a lot.
I've met people.
I've spent a couple days drinking with people, for sure, but I've never had a situation like this. And when you say bad friend, he is the bad friend who is really just trying to be a good friend, but the things that he does in the act of being a good friend will drive you fucking nuts.
He's your worst. I mean, he's everything I hate in the world. I had a boss once like him, who was just like...
Built like a brick shit house?
When he was... Yeah, you know who I'm talking about.
I know.
And when he would get drunk, too, he would just want to fight me. Like, fight me. And I don't think I've ever tried to fight you while drinking.
Thank God.
But he would fight me, and he would just be, like, horribly belligerent. And that's what... He was kind of my vacation friend. And that's kind of the situation here, except these people go home, and they are played by Lil Rel Howery. Is that his name?
He was in Get Out. He was the TSA guy.
Oh, really? He was really good in that. He's not very good in this.
I thought he was fine in this.
We're going to just get it out of the way now. John liked this movie. I did not like it as much. Yvonne Orji. Orgy? Orgy? I don't want to
screw your head.
Yeah, well, that's her name. It's O-R-J-I. I'm trying here in French and in English. She plays the nice wife. And Meredith Hagner, who I don't know. Do you know her from anywhere?
I've seen her in a ton of stuff. She's always fun.
She's the person.
She plays a very specific character, and she does well.
Yeah, so she's the obnoxious vacation friend. So these four, like, are in Mexico, and they fucking light it up. And it's like, you know, just... Every montage you could imagine for every like comedy where there's people just like it's the hangover. It's the hangover. Except not dark. And that's what I thought was going to happen. I thought this movie was going to get dark and it was going to change. What happens is the couple goes back home and they get married, and you know, there's the usual bullshit at the wedding where like maybe her parents don't like him, blah, blah, blah. And John Cena shows up in his giant Jeep Wrangler and he's like, ready to party because I'm the vacation friend. And that's where it crosses the line a little bit into man boy movies. And that's why I just felt like no human being at that age is going that hard and showing off. And the girl, like, usually, like, the girl is, like, the voice of reason, but she is just as hardcore vacation friend as him. And I just couldn't get out of that. They were trying too hard, and I couldn't get out of their acting.
Yeah, it's a movie.
So I was hoping that maybe there would be, like, a point where he would, like, turn around and be, like, a secret agent or something. I thought there'd be a twist. And there's no twist.
It kind of was, you know.
There wasn't a twist.
He kind of was in the service.
Yeah, okay, yeah, there's a weird, there's an ironic thing where he turns into John Cena, I'm also the Marine. But, like, not really, and they didn't play that up too well, other than he wore military fatigues.
No, they fully went into that. There was like the whole B story was all about that. I mean, look, it is.
You're trying to save this movie.
I'm not. I mean, it's fine. If this was in theaters, I said before it's going to be out of theaters quick. It is a serviceable comedy. I did laugh a bunch. He's not kidding. There's a lot of cocaine on margarita glasses in this movie. But like, it's a buddy comedy that takes place over a wedding weekend and a vacation in Mexico. And, you know, it's John Cena just doing what John Cena does now.
It's a buddy comedy where they don't realize they're buddies until the end.
Well, that's the whole gimmick, yeah.
I just was like, I wanted something deeper. Not necessarily deeper, but something smarter. Allison hated it. Yeah. And I don't usually do that thing where like she hates a lot of the stuff I like. I mean, I'm very into a different space, headspace. So if she doesn't like a movie, I get it. But this one, I thought maybe like there would be a redeem. Like I laughed enough to watch the whole movie.
Yeah,
but that's not enough to justify my 2 hours. It's a long movie.
I think we've seen worse movies, buddy. It is a solid 2 hours. I'll give you that. There's a couple times they could have just went home, and they didn't.
But it is what it is. It's on Hulu. It's Vacation Friends. Do you like John Cena? You might like this. Do you like John Cena on cocaine? Probably scary person. Like, I don't know if I'd like to
see. He was a happy cokehead in this movie.
I just feel like he's the type of person who could accidentally hurt you.
Oh, yeah, have you seen him? Of course.
Like, you've never seen me really drunk.
Dude.
I've hurt friends by accident. I know what that's like.
I mean, he's a guy who definitely knows his own strength, and I'm sure he doesn't give a very hard handshake because he knows better, because he would hurt people.
Yeah.
He's massive. He's a moose.
Massive. But I also
love
felt
him
like he's not
so much.
He's not meant to be the main character in the movie. It's the little guy whose name I'm blanking on.
Lil Ray Howard.
Yeah, but I feel like John Cena, because he's so John Cena, he ended up becoming the focal point by accident.
Yeah, because you can't miss him in any scene.
You can't. I wish I liked this a little bit more. I watched the whole thing. I laughed enough. I'm also not a fan of comedies.
You don't like comedies.
I don't like comedies.
Baseline.
It takes a lot. I like The Hangover. That's kind of it. Like, Hangover 3? Like, there's really not much. I like the Will Ferrell stuff. I do like, you know, I still like Elf, and I still love Anchorman. There's some stuff. But, you know, that stuff's kind of dark, too. You know me, I just don't like man boy movies.
The Hangover is shockingly dark, by the way.
Shockingly dark.
Yeah. The other is diminishing returns. That is a franchise that is diminishing returns. But that first one is a very good movie.
And you don't need to watch the sequels. It doesn't need sequels.
It never needs a
Hangover
sequel.
2 is terrible. Hangover 3 is a completely different movie. If you've never seen Hangover 3.
I've seen it.
I think we reviewed it on the show. It was a straight up action movie, which was pretty intense. It was like the A-Team, but with like the Hangover people. Anybody out there, if you want to see something weird, watch Hangover 3, because most of you probably haven't. This movie's fine. Look, man boy movies, not my thing. Like Step Brothers, I hate that movie like life itself.
Yeah, you do.
I hate that. I hate any movie. Like, I struggle with Billy Madison. I struggle with Tommy Boy. It's like I can't at this age be able to believe that a man who's probably my age or close to it can still act like that. Like it just, and I am pretty immature. So I struggle with this sometimes. And that's how I feel. This is a man boy movie. It just is what it is. John liked it.
I enjoyed it. It's a, you know, it's a vanilla right over the plate kind of movie.
Yeah. Speaking of vanilla, White Lotus.
Yeah.
Is so I will say it right now that HBO Max, they make it worth your money. And I feel that even if you don't love a show, like the acting, the amount they're just putting money into it. Like the money you're putting into your $16 a month for HBO Max or whatever it is.
15.
Like they are turning it around into quality programming. You know, The Mayor of Easttown, the Watchmen, the I'm blanking on the other one that was the Kraken.
Oh,
yes,
that one.
I mean, one of those days. Like, it's not even a Kraken; it's the thing. It's Lovecraft Country.
Yes.
Like, what they've been putting out have been so quality that I will sit through most things on there. I'm watching the 9/11 Spike Lee COVID thing right now, the 9/11 to 2001 and a half, which is largely a story of COVID in New York City and what a shitty governor Cuomo was. But I will watch most things on HBO right now. So White Lotus, however, was one of the worst trailers I've ever seen for a TV show. I watched the trailer and I'm like, this is like Mad Men trailers where you would watch them and be like, yes, no, pink, yellow.
Yeah.
I'm on a beach.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, I can't. This won't work for me.
That's why I didn't watch it.
And Allison was like, you should try it. It's dark comedy, but it's also a drama. But the acting's so good, it doesn't really matter. Like, at the end of the day, she's like, the acting's so good, just watch it. You'll like it or you won't like it. Watch an episode. And I started watching this, and she's right. The acting, like, the acting is great. It is a whole bunch of really entitled, fucked up people. Yes. And they are in Hawaii. And I will say this right now to the tiki lovers out there. This is, like, the most tiki-adjacent TV show you will watch, because that Hawaiian music and those waves are just hitting in throughout every hour of it. And I could not stop thinking about how bad I wanted a Mai Tai and lie on the beach of Hawaii. They did such a good job. And then I looked it up, and it turns out they did shoot it at the Four Seasons in Hawaii, in Waikiki, which I've been to. I haven't stayed there, but I've been next to it, to Grand Wailea. And it is, because of COVID, they had shut down. So they were able to go in and shoot at, like, the Four Seasons in Hawaii on location, which helped so much. Because I felt like The Wire is Baltimore. This was Hawaii.
I agree.
This was a story of four or five different people who are in sad places in their lives. Either they're going through divorces, or they're getting married but have a shitty husband who's really rich. Or it's someone whose mother died and she's got to put out their ashes. Lots of very disparate, sad stories. And it's how they've, like, basically bulldozed this hotel, not bulldozed, but mentally bulldozed this hotel, and this guy who owns this, runs this hotel, and all their interactions. And I will agree with you. I think you texted me and told me it was a little bit slow to begin with, but once you hit episode three,
yep,
where, and I don't, you called it a slog. I disagree. I think slog is a bad thing. Slog is like, this is unwatchable. These were still watchable. It's just, I was waiting to get to what they were getting to. And there is a point in episode three where, like, the comeuppance to the people who are assholes on this show is so amazing.
Yeah.
And getting to see, like, what happens to them is worth the price of admission, but it's also funny. I actually laughed out loud. And maybe I shouldn't have laughed. Maybe that's because I'm just dark, but I laughed so much in episode three.
Oh, yeah.
Out loud, that I was like, okay. And then from there, it just keeps going, and it goes in the right direction. At the end, it actually ends kind of dark, but also, like, justifiably dark?
I think so. So, you know, there's a lot of really solid actors and actresses in this. Connie Britton's in it. Jennifer Coolidge, who many people know from comedy roles. Alexander Daddario is the main love interest of this dude named Jake Lacy. I don't know that I've seen him before other places, but you hate him so much. Steve Zahn's in it as well. And they do a good job. And I do agree. I have to come up with a different word than slog, because it wasn't a slog. It was just...
It was a slow build. It was a real slow build.
But they did everything with such purposefulness that when things happen, you are deeper into it. You're deeper into it. And when, like, something that would be a comeuppance comes up, or when something is going to go a different direction, you know, you're feeling it, and you really feel, like, immersed in these characters, which I think is a really impressive thing, especially to do it with an ensemble cast over the course of six episodes. Like, it begins in a certain place, and it kind of ends in a similar place for most of the characters. However, there definitely is spots in there where, like, wow, I didn't think they were going to do that. And it's surprising. It's definitely surprising in a lot of ways. And it's definitely, like, you know, it's not the kind of show where you're going to watch and you are going to see everyone kind of over the course of six episodes become better people, because they don't. Because
you don't in real life.
And that's the thing.
Jake Lacy. So he plays Shane Patton. You know what? I couldn't stop. So, like, first episode, I'm watching this guy, and he is a rich, like, from richness, like, asshole, like, just as entitled as a human being as you can. He is, you know, he was born into it. He is, I think, playing a part of someone in his mid-20s. He's married a lovely lady who is not rich, played by Alexandra Daddario. I know she did a lot of things. I just know her as the hot chick from True Detective season one.
Yep.
But she plays Rachel Pan. They're married. This is their honeymoon. And just from moment one, he does not give a shit. Like, all he's like, I want you to quit your job being a reporter. I want you to just be, like, my trophy wife. Like, that's just all he knows. And his mother, who I will not spoil much, but she's played by Molly Shannon. And I just love when she shows up later in the show. But it's just, like, people are assholes. But I got to tell you, and you got to pay attention to me here. Jake Lacy, Andy from The Office's twin. If he played a young, if you wanted to do an Andy in The Office, like, backstory.
Oh, shit.
And do someone young, right?
Yes.
I couldn't stop looking at him. He looked just like a young Andy. Speak of Hangover. Yeah, like, looked just like him.
Yeah, and he's so great in this because he really makes you hate him.
So good, but he's not a bad guy. Like, no one here is a bad guy, and that's the whole thing with it. It's no one's really a bad guy. It's just people living life, and it's tough for us to really, like, sell this because it's a story where you kind of have to watch it because it really is a drama, and dramas are hard to review because it's like, well, it's a story about people's lives. But I will just say this right now. There is the lady who plays the mom in American Pie. I believe her name is Jennifer Coolidge.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's what I know her as. The MILF. It's Stifler's mom is now older, and she is, like, just fucking, she's also rich. She has no idea how not to just be rich, and she has got to spread her mother's ashes into the sea. But there's clearly something wrong with her, and she just latches onto people, sucks them dry, and then moves on to the next person. And there is a scene where she distributes her mother's ashes that is so fucking hilarious, and it also ties into the comeuppance of the guy who looks like Andy. It is great. I thought this was a great show. It is a slow build. I thought it was completely different than, like, Mayor of Easttown. But it's still, like, that well-acted, well-written, heavy. This is also a little bit funny. I would call it. It's listed as a comedy, which is not a comedy.
It's not a comedy. But however, when something funny happens,
it's hilarious.
You can't stop laughing.
Yeah, so I recommend this. I think if you like the recent stuff that I've played on HBO since HBO Max launched, this is right up there. I think it's just really good. It's just this reminds me of, like, Quentin Tarantino's Four Rooms,
right?
Like something like that, where it's like different stories that kind of tie together.
Yeah,
you're not. No, I just saw The Dead Girl. It's kind of like that, but that's so dark and depressing. No, not going there.
One little sidebar I'm going to make here is if you like the idea of, like, these kind of vacation comedies on Hulu right now, Greg Garcia, who produced My Name Is Earl, he directed My Name Is Earl. He's done a bunch of stuff. Got a comedy called The Guest Book. It's 2 seasons, 20 episodes, and each episode revolves around people who check into this, like, essentially B&B, and the wacky stuff that happens and the arc that their life takes over, like, the weekend that they're in this B&B. It is very thoughtful. It is very funny. It is definitely, like, a much, much lighter and, I think, you know, more charming version of White Lotus, but I highly recommend it, and it's on Hulu. You're probably going to have some trouble finding it because it's on Hulu, but I think it's definitely worth your time. Really bite-sized half-hour episodes.
If you like Steve Zane,
yeah,
this is a Steve Zane show you should watch. So Steve Zane, who is in pretty much everything,
yeah,
he kills in this. And actually, I think he has...
I'm thinking of the moment in episode 3.
Yeah. I mean, this show opens up in the first episode with his dick. Like, literally, they just show... I mean, that I was like, oh, we're going there. Like, full on male genitalia, balls around your face. Steve Zane, just all exposed. He's you see a lot of him in this, but he actually is the one person who, like, really has an arc that ends with him in a good place at the end.
Yeah.
You know, will he be able to continue that? Who knows? But I enjoyed that. I also liked his son's arc a little bit too. The kid was a little bit tough on the acting side. He's from Fear Street.
Yes.
He was doing a lot of the press for this because of that.
Yeah. I mean, dude, I thought he was great in this. I will tell you, I thought I would go my entire life without ever seeing Steve Zahn's dick, but here we are.
It could also be, it could be not his penis. It could be.
It's still.
Did you hear about William Dafoe? So I'm watching The Lighthouse now. I'm trying to get through The Lighthouse. I'm struggling. But William Dafoe, do you know in the movie, and I don't know if you've ever seen it, the movie is the one where he is, it's not called Lucifer. You know the one that's, like, one of the worst movies, like the movies that will make you lose your... I'm just messing this up. William Dafoe shows his dick in a movie. Okay. That's all we need to talk about. He shows his dick in a movie, but it's not his dick. It is a prosthesis. Do you know why it is?
Why? Because he's got too big of a dick?
Too big of a dick. The director had him drop his pants, and William Dafoe dropped trow, and they took a look at this. Like this movie was about, you know, a person who is, he's basically... You shouldn't have a big penis. Like, it's not like the type. No,
that's William Dafoe, the character.
Really, just drops his pants, and is just like gigantic fucking ham hog of a dick, just like comes pouring out. And the director's like, yeah, we need to get a stand in because that is way too much penis. So I feel like that's what it would be like if you ever starred in a movie. So
I gotta hope so.
Antichrist is the movie where you see his penis. That is not actually William Dafoe's penis. William Dafoe's penis is much more. It's almost like, you know, Batista levels of conversation. So I heard that from a good source. That could have actually been our friend Matt Giaquinto. But I don't know. That was a Lars von Trier movie, so it's very expensive.
That, that feels exactly what like a Lars von Trier movie would be.
And he's the one who is like, look, that penis is too powerful for this movie. We need to... Though I kind of think that sucks, too, though, because unlike like Dirk Diggler and like Mark Wahlberg in Boogie Nights, where he uses a prosthesis from what I hear, you know, I would be... ashamed if now I'm associated, like I'd definitely get the story out that it's a fake dick because I would not people think I have a small penis.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Mark Wahlberg was probably didn't want anybody to know that that was a prosthesis because it was like the, you know, size of a baby's arm.
Jesus
like
Christ.
Like fisted.
My God.
You know what I mean? You know what I mean? I'm just saying. So this week, John wanted me to watch a movie that supposedly starred Jason Momoa called Sweet Child, but when he texted me and said, can you watch this movie? He wrote Sweet Thing, and I believe it was in the, not necessarily the initial text, I don't know where you said it, but I believe it was in the final one where you're like, watching Sweet Thing now. So I'm like, I will watch Sweet Thing. I didn't know Jason Momoa was in it. I looked up and found out a movie came out in June, late June, called Sweet Thing, about two children who are struggling with their alcoholic father, and they have to leave, and then things get worse. Very disturbing movie, black and white. I started watching this. I'm like, wow, this is... even dark for me, John. This is not your type of movie. I don't know why you're making me watch this. I watched it. I spent the whole night watching it. And then I get here today. I'm like, dude, that was a really rough move. And he's like, with Jason Momoa? I'm like, oh, you mean Sweet Child on Netflix.
It's actually Sweet Girl.
Sweet Girl?
Yeah. So I, in my brain. So
you botched that so bad.
I completely
botched
it.
Was it good?
It was pretty good. It was good, but it had a twist. Friends
or this? Or which one's better?
I think Vacation Friends.
Then this movie consistent. Is fucking shit.
Well, it's different though because it's an action movie, but it's a very slow action movie that has a twist. I'm gonna say, I gotta look at it again, make sure I don't say the wrong movie again. Sweet Girl. It's Sweet Girl. They sing the Sweet Child of Mine keeps popping up in the movie, so my brain, I kept thinking it was Sweet Child. It's actually Sweet Girl.
But you told me Sweet Thing.
Look, mistakes were made. Mistakes were made.
This isn't the first time this happened. I don't know if the last time was my fault or yours.
So often, no, but it's like it's a dark movie.
I know this happened. So instead, we're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Anthrax. I was listening to coming home from Yankee Stadium. So 2 weeks ago, I went to a Motorola event, Yankee Stadium, my first public event.
Sorry, I couldn't hear what you said.
Siri, you got to stop doing that. You annoy the hell out of me. Went to my first public event with other reporters at Yankee Stadium to announce a new phone. There's about 25, 30 people in the room. It was everybody had to be vaccinated. You got to show your card to get in. So it was a little more not weird, but still a little weird.
Yeah, of course.
And then out comes Bernie Williams and Mariano Rivera.
Okay.
And they make me throw place baseball with them. Like I got to like hang out with them.
Well,
and
shit,
that was
dude,
interesting.
That's awesome.
I got to go see the new Yankee Stadium. It was fun, but on the way back home, I was listening to the Eddie Trunk podcast, and they had Anthrax on. Well, did I tell you to listen to this, or did you pick it up from someone else?
So Don Becker actually recommended it.
Okay,
I've been watching it every night.
I thought I recommended it to you guys, but maybe I went to a different group and recommended it. But I listened to the show, and they said that Anthrax, to celebrate their 40th anniversary, were doing this docuseries on YouTube, and I'm like, I'll watch this. Why not? Anthrax. Not one of my favorite metal bands. Anthrax was at a period of my life where I thought they were too... I didn't like Joey Belladonna's voice.
Right.
Not a big fan of that. I wasn't a big fan of thrash, though at the time Metallica had Justice for All. That wasn't as thrashy as their other stuff. I was a big Iron Maiden fan.
Yeah.
I never really liked Slayer. Anthrax, like, I liked Anthrax songs. I liked Bring the Noise. I liked Caught in a Mosh. I liked... Indians. There's some stuff I liked by them, but for the most part, wasn't the biggest Anthrax fan. And but I watched this, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Quick transition. I, however, became a big John Bush Anthrax fan.
It's so funny.
When Sound of White Noise came out, I was in late high school working at Yarick's Place, and that was like modern metal. And they fit right into the grunge era. And Sound of White Noise with Only and with the big The Room song, like they had so many good hits on there. And I was just in love with it. And I didn't even realize how long John Bush continued to be in the band. John Bush was in the band significantly longer than Joey Belladonna was in the band. And yeah. I feel like that is one of the one times ever where a replacement singer became as important as the original singer, even though Joey Belladonna wasn't actually the original singer, but we won't go there yet. I was very impressed by it. I didn't realize how many people like me there were out there who actually, it wasn't like a Blaze Bailey situation. We recorded two albums and we're a Ripper Owens. Like John Bush did like 5-6 albums with them. He is the former singer of Armored Saint. They pulled a like Ronnie James Dio.
Yeah.
They're like, if we're going to replace Ozzy, we got to replace him with a legend. So they brought him in. I mean, John Bush was supposed to be the lead singer of Metallica.
Yeah.
James Hetfield did not want to sing. He wanted to play guitar. And they were going to bring in John Bush, and it just didn't work out. He wanted to stick to Armored Saint. I'm sure he regrets it to this day. I'm
sure James Hetfield doesn't.
But it wasn't like a Dave Mustaine situation where they kicked him out. And I just love that. So hearing these stories, and I think it's 24 episodes. I think they're done with it now. And it follows them through everything, starting with Joey, but starting with the original lead singer who did one album but was kind of an asshole. So
it's full of metal.
And then they went through how they got Joey Belladonna. And what I love about that, with the exception of the singer who they had for like 1 year in 2005, every single person that was ever in the band is in this documentary.
Yeah.
They go through 24 episodes where they're just interviewing everybody. It's done through Zoom. And it's done through side cameras, so clearly they were like, we're going to record it through Zoom, and we're going to put a camera phone up on the side so we got two angles. And they interview everybody. You know, Danny Spitz, legend. Keanu Reeves is in this. Everyone they could possibly have. Gene Simmons is in this. Like, everyone is in this. It's such a great way to get a new take on a band who are legends. I was never the biggest fan of. And when they get to the John Bush era, they give him, like, there's John Bush, and they go through it. What are your thoughts? I don't know how big of an Anthrax fan you are.
So I was not the biggest Anthrax fan. I appreciate them and I recognize them.
Were you a metal fan as a kid?
I was.
Yeah, we've never talked about that before.
But you know what? It was weird because Anthrax was like, while they were like so big, they weren't in a lot of ways as big as some of the other bands that were coming around at the time. I acknowledge them and appreciate them as one of the big four of thrash, where you have, or the four horses of thrash, you have Slayer, Anthrax, Metallica, Megadeth. It's weird though, because when they were kind of waning before John Bush happened, right? They were at the peak, and then they kind of waned for a second because Belladonna left and Bush comes in. They become a completely different band. And so I was confused at first when I was young, because Fistful of Metal guy didn't sound like the guy on Among the Living, right? And back then, like, you unless you knew, you didn't know. And then I start getting into it a little bit, but then now this new record comes out and it's John Bush, and I'm like, but it's a different guy. And I think back then a lot of my brain couldn't really function on, like, well, it's like a new singer, but it's the same band. Like, it just didn't really compute for me.
My thing that bothered me was, and this is my complaint about the documentary, they hit a point in 2001. They had the point where they like almost lose their name. They cover that on there. Not the almost lose their name, but, you know, Anthrax became a bad thing.
Yeah.
And they get through that when they do a lot to support the 9/11 first responders. But, you know, what they cut out, and I don't know how much. So they don't talk about the third lead singer because of legalities. So they kind of jump straight to Joey Belladonna.
Yeah.
But the whole Sid drama, and this was something I really wanted to learn. Like, they do such a good job. For 20 episodes, they cover everything. And I love it. But they hit a point around episodes 23, 24, where they miss 5 years. And in those 5 years, they have, you know, they decide they need money, so they decide to do the big four series with Metallica, Megadeth, and Slayer without John Bush, who is beloved, has given them some of their best, kept them alive for like decades. They decide to say, look, it makes more sense to do it with Joey Belladonna. We want to do this. It works. And I think they kind of, there was an offer to him to do maybe a split set with him. And he's like, yeah, thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
Like, that's not cool. And then they did that. And then they came back and Joey Belladonna was like, I got no interest in doing anything else with you guys. Like, I'm done. And John Bush was very much like, they just expected him to jump back in. They're like, oh, we made this new album. John, come on, let's do it. Like,
yeah,
you missed out at your payday for this huge fucking stadium tour.
Yeah.
And like, come back. And he's like, I don't want to come back. Like, I'm sorry, but like, that's kind of fucked up. And he stood straight on that.
I respect that.
And they brought in some other jabron who did like a year with them, recorded an album with them. They're like, yeah, this guy's got to go. They get rid of him. They somehow get Joey Belladonna back. He records the album. They've recorded another album since. Both are supposedly great albums. But I felt like how they burned John Bush was really, really rough. And, you know, to this day, I've been, I haven't loved it. It's like, he's back in it. He comes back in later, and he does a very thing. Like, Joey Belladonna is who should be in the lead singer of Anthrax right now. But I just always had a bad, and you see it in the comments. Like, everyone, including me, went to check to see if we missed an episode.
Yeah.
We checked to see if we missed an episode. And I was just very, I just felt a little weird about it. And they lost a lot of respect from metal fans, too, because of that. Like, let's be very clear. Like, they had huge singles and number one albums with John Bush. Like, the John Bush thing was kind of, I saw them live with John Bush.
Oh, nice.
Josh took me to Bowery Ballroom to see them, I think, in 2005, 2007. And it was like, he did such a great job. And then they did what I know you hate. They went and recorded an album of all their Joey Belladonna hits with John Bush singing. Yeah. But then everybody loved that album. They were like, all right, but it's John Bush who just is raw and aggressive, but he's not Cookie Monster. It's like he's got that right voice for an Anthrax. Whereas Joey Belladonna, I always felt, was too polished for a band who were like, we're from like Queens, Brooklyn, like we're New York, like we're hard. Like, I just always felt like they should have had like Roger Merritt singing for them.
But see, I think that's what differentiated them and made them great, was having someone like a Joey Belladonna, because otherwise they would have just been a dime a dozen like every other band. That actually helped them stand out. You know, I really did grow to appreciate them a lot more throughout this series. And, you know, I've always been a fan of Scott Ian. I you know, he's just like a happy dude who's like making music. And like, I always looked at like Anthrax like as like the schlubby band, because they were like, yeah, we just like want to smile and have fun. And we wear like shorts on stage, and like, you know, our hair isn't like the best because, you know, we're dudes who don't take a lot of time to do our hair. And like, I kind of always appreciated that about them. But like, every time I would try to get into them, like, it would change. And so then the John Bush thing happened. And then like, I kind of wasn't really, you know, I was. You know, kind of.
Well, by then we were listening to punk rock.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. it's like more into punk rock at the time. But, you know, dude, those first few Anthrax albums rip. Even Fistful of Metal, but it's a different kind of experience. But like, but they're essentially like almost three different bands: Fistful of Metal era, which is one album; the Joey Belladonna era; the John Bush era; and then there's the new Joey Belladonna era, which.
So his voice still sticks. He actually was able to keep his voice up, which I'm kind of impressed with. I felt like the only thing with him is during these documentaries, and some of them range, like some of them are like 8 minutes long, some of them are like 45 minutes long. Like, this is like, this is going to be a like 10 hour super cut. And, I very much, I love it. I thought it was a great way to do it. Again, so they couldn't talk about the singer, that 1 year singer towards the end, because I think they're in a lawsuit with him right now.
Yeah.
But I just kind of wanted a little bit more on John Bush. I think they go into in Scott Ian's book, which I might check out now because I enjoyed it so much. They basically talk about how, in addition to kind of feeling a little slighted about the Joey Belladonna thing, he also, John Bush also had kids then. He had gotten married. He had kids. I think he was a little bit burnt out from the road, so he just figured that was a good time. But again, I would still be a little bit miffed if it was
like... Yeah, but like, you know, it's still like, oh, you want to take a break so you can go fuck your ex-girlfriend one last time. Let me know if the juice is worth the squeeze, honey. I ain't coming back.
The comment section. Look at episodes 24, 23, and look at the comments, and you just see everybody, like, there's a lot of people who are kind of like, you just, like, skipped over the part where you guys are assholes, and this whole documentary is you guys being like, you know, you're the cool dudes. You guys smile in photos. You guys wear fluorescent shorts. Like, you're different than everybody else, and that made you stand out, and also pissed off Kerry King, who, God, is Kerry King a racist? Because he comes off like such a, like...
I don't know, man.
When they talk about the Public Enemy stuff in there, he's like, yeah, fucking rap doesn't belong in metal. Like, he just comes off like such a, like, of course, Kerry King's going to show up at my doorstep now.
But, don't say his name three times, bro.
Yeah, it's going to be like, it's like Rick to Life. You know, that was always the thing. Like, you badmouth Rick to Life, he'll appear in your room.
Or he'll set up a distro in your yard.
Yeah, or that. Rick to Life on a horse. Check it out. I'm so done. I'm so done. My like this week has just been, it's just, it doesn't end. So I went on vacation.
You did?
Went to Wildwood and we had a lot of firsts, which was nice. We, first time Gabe ever boogie board.
Nice.
He did in the ocean. I would have him, like, basically I would take him. Wildwood's great because there's two crests. There's like the wave in the front, and then you go back, go walk up to like 6 feet, and then it goes back down to like 3 feet again.
Yeah.
There's their crest. So I would take him to the first crest, and I would basically like put him on the board, and I would just make him go forward. Like, I'd let the wave take him, and he was like so jazzed by it. But he mostly wanted to play in the sand, and it was one of those, it was a week, I don't know what it was like here, but it was the first time I ever saw on my app where it would say 88 degrees feels like 105.
You sent me that pic.
And I'm like, this is bonkers. This is not fun. Like, this is not, so we were stuck in our, luckily we had an Airbnb and not a hotel, so we got to do stuff in the house, but it was so freaking hot that we could, other than going to the shore and finding water stuff to do, there was nothing to really do during the day. And then it wouldn't break at night. So it was like, you go to boardwalk, it's still really fucking hot.
Yeah, it's unbearable.
So it was a rough vacation, but it was nice to get away from work. But what I did was take him to his first water park.
Went
to Raging Waters in Wildwood, and he loved it. Like, I can't tell you, 4 hours. So I'm gonna blow your mind a little bit. So we start out in the baby pool area. We're doing like the little pirate ships and this and that, the little baby slides. He's having fun, but he keeps going, big one, daddy. My kid's four.
Yeah.
I'm like, you can't go on the big ones. So we make our way up higher, and I found out there was a tandem big one they can do with two tubes attached, and basically you go down and you drop a little bit and you do a little bit more around and you drop. It's almost like a log flume type of situation. We did that. He loved it. He's like, big one, daddy, big one. I want bigger ones. And I'm like, you can't do the big ones. So we found a place that was just like a large fucking pool where like people, like adults could just wade in, you know, you're in a pool, you're swimming, and then there's a really steep slide like in Verona Park where like you just speed slide. Yeah. But it's short, so you could do it. So he's going up, and he wants to do it over and over again. So I'm just putting him up, and he's going up, and he's going down. He's wearing a life preserver.
Right. He's small.
Which he's allowed to. He has to wear on anything bigger than a certain size. Then he goes up, and I lose him. I lose my child, John. I lose my child. I can't
fucking
find him.
How terrifying is that?
And it's just me and him.
Yeah.
Because we do the bro down thing. And he's gone. I get out of the pool, and I'm, like, terrified. He's not on the staircase leading up to the slide. He's not on the slide. I can't find him anywhere. I go up, I climb the slide, and I climb to the top, and there is a partition where you can either go up to crazy speed slides, or you can go over to the 60-foot Tarzan swing, or you can go to the speed slide. Gabe is not on the speed slide. I'm looking out. He is in 10 feet of water.
Holy crap.
In the Tarzan swing pool, wading back to the edge.
He did a Tarzan swing?
And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a second. I'm pulling him. I'm freaking out. I'm pulling him out of 10 feet of water. I'm like, what if I'm beside myself? I'm like, what did you do? He said, everyone let me cut in the line. They let me through. He literally walked up. There's a line for the Tarzan swing. This I didn't see this, but this is my brain. You can picture too.
Yes.
Walks up, cuts the line all the way up the line. His 4 year old cuts the line, goes right from. They let him cut. And there's a long. They let him cut. He grabs the Tarzan swing, and this motherfucker swings over like 20 feet into 10 feet of water and then waddles over to the edge. It goes, I just did that.
He's a sweet little boy. How did he say no?
So
because he's a kid.
So then he goes again, and I'm like, I kind of need to see you do this. So I do it with him. So I take him up, and we wait in line this time. Like, you can't cut lines.
Yes, dude. Come on.
And he grabs, and I look at the lifeguard, who's like this 10-year-old, and he's like, yeah, well, he wanted to do it, and he's got a life preserver on. And I'm like, okay. So he holds onto it. He flings out. He gets to certain. He drops 20 feet into 10 feet of water, and he's just, and then I have to wait till he clears so I can do it, so I can get him. And he's just like doggy paddling. And he did. And I like go on and immediately fall to my death because I can't. So then,
gravity.
So then the lifeguard who I'm yelling at for letting him do goes, nah, man, like if he's got that, let's take him to the big one. And Gabe goes, big one. And I'm like, well, okay. I guess it actually goes into the Tarzan swing water. So we go climb and climb and climb and climb. And it is literally a straight shoot. Like it is like just drop after drop after drop, going like 100 miles per hour into like drop 40 feet into 10 feet of water. And I'm like, I'm the worst father ever. Boop. And like it's tandem. So there's two slides at the same time. So I can do it at the same time. At least like when I hit the ground, I can grab him.
Yeah.
I hit it like a log, like fucking boom, 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 boom. He just torpedoes down, hits the water. I hit it, water up my nose. Yeah. Everything. I look over and he's like, just doggy pants. He's like, yeah, dad, again.
You're like, no, no.
I could have pictured George's, just the other George, like our friend, just, I could just picture him, like, I can't even bring myself to tell him what happened. Like, and he did it. Allison would have killed me. I had to tell Allison afterwards, but he did like the big freaking slides and he didn't do anything that was like water slides where I couldn't see him. So yeah, like at least the Tarzan swing, I could see him and God forbid he goes the wrong way, I can get him. He was wearing a life preserver.
Yeah, of course.
But still, he can't swim. Like, he doesn't know how to swim. I haven't. Yeah.
He gonna learn.
I was gonna teach him, and then COVID happened. So yeah. I never, like, got classes. That was my vacation.
Oh, Jesus.
And I came home, and we got to Wildwood. And the final thing he did was the first time he ever did big boy rides by himself.
Oh, cool.
So he did, like, the motorcycles, like spinning rides. Like, yeah, you know, yeah. But, like, boardwalk rides. And he was, like, happy as anything. Very intense, though. Like, very intense. Like, I am going to kill this ride.
Of course he is.
I'm riding a motorcycle.
Big boy loves motorcycles. Motorcycle.
And then I took my, I don't think we talked about it, but I was able to rig up a child seat onto the back of my electric bicycle. And yeah, that's been his thing. That's been his jam, just riding around on the back. And, you know, so.
I've seen a lot of those around town recently.
Yeah. I mean, that's why it's so hard to get them. It's their the thing now. It's like, especially if you're working from home, I've called it my two-wheel summer.
Yeah.
I'm just riding around either my electric bike or my new Vespa, and it's just been fun to not have to drive my car. Though now I thought I was going back to work in September.
Yeah.
So I bought a new car, and now, of course, it's like, change of mind, maybe November.
Yeah, my company that I work for, they're like, yeah, we're not coming back till next year. So
I have a feeling we might end up there, but I think for right now, it's just.
I mean, they're in Ohio. It's a lot of rising cases and stuff. And
yeah, we got to be careful because obviously we're a national company with stores, yeah. So we got to be a lot more careful. So Snake Eyes, we've been waiting for a while for Snake Eyes.
Yeah.
It finally dropped on I think Paramount Plus or one of those Peacocks.
Lots of different places you could rent it this weekend.
Yeah, and it dropped, and I was excited because Snake Eyes is a weird one. Snake Eyes had a very low Rotten Tomato meter, but it had a very high fan meter. So because this is a G.I. Joe movie, and I saw what happened with the last G.I. Joe movie, which was a very good G.I. Joe movie. I felt the last G.I. Joe movie was as true as you can get to the real cartoon, knowing it's live action, so you can only get so cheesy.
Yeah.
I felt by killing off like all the major characters from the previous shitty movie in the very first 10 minutes and just having The Rock be Roadblock and do The Rock stuff, they did a great job at the last one. So I had some hope in this weekend. 75% fan meter, 37% critic meter. I'm not willing to trust critics on this because they're not always G.I. Joe
fans.
I don't
think you can trust a critic on a movie like this. And I hate to be like that, but like, you know, they immediately go in, many critics, I'm not going to say every critic, but many critics go in ready to be like, it's a toy movie. It's here to sell toys. They're not going to take it seriously and give it any kind of merit or due.
100%. And that's how it was originally with the original Marvel movies. Like, the reviews were never as good as they are now. The original reviews were always like,
you know, it took like 10 movies for them to get comfortable.
It took a while. And that's why I was like, I went in with this. I'm going to watch this. I'll see it. Maybe it's the rise of Cobra. Maybe it's the rise of this. I already was a little bit jaded by, I realized what they did, but you know, they cast an Asian person as Snake Eyes, which I get it, but I always kind of felt there was more to the story about him being a white person who was a former military commando, who was a former Vietnam vet. In this case, he could have been Iraq, and he got disfigured saving Storm Shadow from a grenade or shrapnel or something. Snake Eyes takes him, Storm Shadow takes him home, trains him, gives him who he makes him a ninja, basically. Yep. And then what happens in the cartoon is that Zartan, we find out later, kills his uncle, the blind master, hard master, I don't know which one, and it's blamed on Snake Eyes, and Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow hate each other, and that's how they become arch enemies in the comic book slash cartoon. I don't think it's in the cartoon, but in the comic book,
yeah,
which I always felt was better canon because it was Larry Hama. In this case, it is more like the Batman story in the movies, the recent movies, the trilogy, where it is that, you know, they casted an Asian person, but he's more of a like hired gun trying to infiltrate Storm Shadow's people to find out who killed his father, because he thought it was people that worked with Storm Shadow's people. The problem is that from point A to point B, we don't find out how Snake Eyes becomes a fucking ninja. Like, yeah. There's no, they show you how he becomes a member of the Arashagi clan, but he's already a ninja to begin with.
Pretty much.
So I feel like this isn't much of an origin story, A. I actually prefer the original origin story more, because at least that has a point. Like, he saves Storm Shadow through a more realistic way. In this way, the way to get from point A to point B is so dumb.
Yeah.
And look, I will say this for this minute. I'll talk about positive things. The action is very good.
Yeah.
The kung fu in this is very good.
Oh, yeah.
The you know, I wish there was a little more Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I was kind of hoping for a little bit more fun. Like,
I thought that was what it was going to be, too.
And they didn't really do that. It's more straight up, like, fighting. Or more Raid Redemption. I was hoping for that, like, scene from, like, Daredevil type thing where he's taking on, but it's more realistic.
Yeah.
No, this is what you think you're getting, where it is basically just one guy tries to get into a clan to find out who murdered his father. He gets from point A to point B, realizes it's the wrong person, yada, yada, yada. They shoehorn in G.I. Joe and Cobra.
I was just going to say that.
Shoehorn it in. Like, Scarlet and Baroness are so... First of all, I got to tell you, like, Baroness is my type.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know my type. It's Baroness. And I got to tell you, the girl they casted as Baroness didn't work for me. I just felt she did not have that Baroness. Even the Baroness in the other movies was more the Baroness than in this one. But there's no Destro. There's no Cobra Commander.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus is more the Baroness than, like, you know.
It just didn't do it for me. She just didn't look like the Baroness. I wanted, like, you know, wavy, long black hair and just more of a nerdy girl meets sultry, like,
that will kill you.
And I just didn't, this one, she just didn't work for me. The lady who played Scarlet was fine.
Samara Weaving, I thought it was great as Scarlet.
It was great, but, like, again, this one just felt so shoehorned. Like, there was just no, it just didn't work for me. I watched the whole thing. It was too long. It was about a half hour too long. They don't really get to Cobra. There was no reveal at the end. There was a reveal, but it wasn't like anything new. It was no surprise.
You saw a crate open up and had a Cobra logo on it.
Yeah, but there were Cobra logos throughout the whole movie. So it's not like, it wasn't that weird to have Cobra. Like, there's Cobra logos in the beginning with the guns too. Like, all the guns.
Yeah, it's here's the thing. As a movie, it's okay. It's a good movie. It's decent. It's like, if it was just a movie about a dude trying to get revenge for his father and making a new friend, betraying that friend, you know, it's good. Serviceable. You know? But when it is Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow, and then you shoehorn all the G.I. Joe bullshit in there, it really falls apart. It is no longer a movie that is serviceable and held together. It kind of is like, you know, like, you can't even, like, fantasy book what's going to come next, because nothing's going to come next. It bombs.
Snake Eyes, let's pull it back a little more. Snake Eyes in the comic book is deformed.
Yep.
He's behind the mask because he hit a grenade. He doesn't speak. Like, there's mystery to him. There's no mystery here. Like, other than, like, dude, how do you become a ninja without any training? Like, it just bothered me. I don't think this is the worst G.I. Joe movie. That would be the first G.I. Joe movie. Not terrible. The cartoon, but the first live-action G.I. Joe movie. Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad I didn't spend money to see this in the theater. And that's the thing. Anybody who right now complains about movies flopping in the theater, it's like, yeah, but some movies are still bad.
Yeah, and in this way, like, you are paying a reduced cost to watch it on Amazon than you would, you know, because look, if you're watching it on Amazon, it's $20. If you're going to the theater with a buddy or a date, you're spending $50-ish to enjoy it or not enjoy it in the theater. So I mean, no matter what, you're saving money on a safer bet at home. This movie bombed for all intents. It bombed. It would have bombed in the theaters. It was going to bomb everywhere. Nothing was going to save this movie. So safe to say the G.I. Joe franchise is dead for a while again, because they were hoping that this was going to really spark up a new franchise that they could rebuild from here, kind of become like the Marvel universe of G.I. Joe. But it did not. It didn't. I don't think it made like half of what it cost to make. So
it is what it is. I'm getting glad I waited on this. This is the one good thing about the pandemic. Like, I probably would have seen this in the movie theaters.
Yeah, me too.
And, you know, but on the sad side, like, I kind of want to see Candyman. I'm psyched to see. I heard that got very good reviews, so I'm excited to see that.
So Snake Eyes did so poorly, just to put a little button on this, that it did so poorly that they were like, yeah, we know we said 45-day window exclusivity at theaters, but we kind of need to make some money on this, so
I said,
we're going to put it on VOD.
I said that's going to happen a lot. I do believe that. I think if they don't hit numbers they want to hit, they have to pivot. And that's what Invisible Man did last year. That's what helped make that a success, because it came out, and like 2 weeks later, with tons of buzz, 2 weeks later, it was COVID. So they pivoted very quickly and put it in on demand. And there is you don't have to have it on a free platform like HBO Max. Like, you could have a pay model too. Like, you still can pay Fios and get like a movie. You know, it's like AEW All Out is this weekend. I'll probably be buying it on Fios, as everybody else should. Like, there are options out there for people if you know, for movie companies other than just not make any money off of it.
Well, I think it's also like an important thing to look at for theaters as well. Like, exclusive is great. Exclusivity is awesome with these movies. But if like they're not putting asses in seats, they got to go, because you need to more than ever. If a theater is going to be open, it needs to have movies that are going to put asses in seats. It can't have like half empty showings or no people showing. So what's the point? It's like, oh, you fought to get exclusivity, but now you're just not making any money still. Like,
yeah, what's funny is I think I saw numbers say where Tenet right now, their worldwide gross is now better than anything coming out now, so, which is scary, because that means this whole, like,
yeah,
it didn't get better. And I said that from the beginning. Movies are going to be the last things to come back, and I do feel that way. Like, whatever, they got to figure out their model before it does bite them in the ass, and we'll see what happens.
Agree with that.
You know, I'm still shocked that the Ryan Reynolds movie did gangbusters, that I was not expecting. I'm still shocked Suicide Squad did as bad as it did. And maybe that is because of HBO Max. I think there's other issues there, too. I think just the first one being so bad, people weren't going to gamble on the movies for that. But, you know, here we are, and there's a lot of good stuff coming out. I'm still very curious to see what happens. Spider-Man dropped a trailer while you were gone.
Yep.
Leaked it, then dropped it, then leak it. That was so weird. That was such a weird leakage. Whoever videotaped the trailer on their phone and then put it out, forcing their hand. But I mean, people wanted it. I mean, we are months away from the launch, and I think they were dragging their feet because they're still considering when they're going to launch it.
I don't think they're going to push Spider-Man. I think now they can't. They can't. And if they can't push it, it's coming on Disney Plus.
I don't think they can do Disney Plus. I think this is Sony. I don't think they can do that one yet. That's the one. I think that's the third one. They can't do that. Then afterwards, they're going to go. I think that's the last one. They have to go through the other channel. I don't know what it goes to next, but it's not straight to Disney.
Well, in another 40 days from now, I will enjoy Shang-Chi on Disney Plus.
When does that launch?
Shang-Chi drops Friday.
Oh, it does? Really? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's bad. The fact that I don't hear anybody talking about that.
It's getting great reviews. People are really psyched.
No, I don't. I believe the reviews. I'm shocked that like I haven't just word of mouth amongst friends and water cooler isn't.
Yeah, but no one's going to the movies.
I know.
Like, so if it is not appearing in our homes, I don't know many people. I don't know, maybe one person who's gone to see like one movie since the movie.
Oh, I know one of our friends who has, but they're also single and willing to just go and do it.
Good for them.
And you know what? And the same thing. I have a friend at work who redid his Amazon, AMC Plus.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he goes, Premier but Plus. Again, he's single. Does have kids. Doesn't care. Kind of a hermit. Let him go do his thing.
No, God bless. If you want to do it, live it. Do enjoy it. Be safe out there. But like, yeah, I mean. But generally, by and large, we don't know people who are going to movies. So, like, there's not really much to talk about, because you're not going to be able to talk about it with anyone else because we're not going to movies.
Yeah. I mean, assuming the world's in a better place come December, Spider-Man might be my first one.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I think I think we're about to hit, if we haven't already hit, we're about to hit the third wave of COVID, and then if it's anything like the Spanish flu, it'll be the last. So we'll see.
How long ago was the Spanish flu?
1918.
Yeah, this is nothing like the flu. Spanish flu. I feel that's racist
that was,
now.
Well, that was a, it was a pandemic. I mean, like, that's what they call it in the history books.
I know.
I'll gladly call it anything else you want, folks. But I'm just
the John flu.
It's not the John flu. It's not John flu. Why would you say that?
I don't know.
That's just jerky.
Don't stop. That's not that jerky. I've said way meaner things to you last week.
I know you have. It's true.
I mean, what did I say last time? It was bad.
I don't remember.
Fingers up the ass. I don't remember.
Like that. I don't know.
How can the kids reach you?
You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram. I'm kind of posting more, maybe sort of, but
it's so good to see you. Like, there is nothing that makes me happier than when you share your life with the world.
I do sometimes. I'm getting there. But I am promoting Rocket to Russia, my very first adventure for 3-2-1 action, is out now. You can buy physical copies over on Exalted Funeral. You can get the PDF only on itch.io. Check out 321actiongames.com for all the information. George, where do people find you?
People can reach me at GLK Creative on Instagram and Twitter and TikTok.
What?
You can find us at Mai Tai Happy Hour on Instagram. You can find us at MaiTaiTV.com for our whole archive. My blog is Cult of George. I have a TV show called George Talks Tech that airs every now and then. Not a show, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And it's on demand. You have to go to movies for that. And, you know, we're in high busy season for tech, so it's fun out there. Anyway, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe. We love each and every one of you. Thank you for all of you who said you missed the episode while I was gone. We appreciate you. John, take us out.
Everybody remember, wear a mask when you can't social distance, social distance when you can. Please, for the love of God, if you haven't gotten vaccinated already, do it. Be nice to yourself. Aloha.